Hey, welcome back to Kilmeade and Friends, making our way through the first hour. And we know the screaming headlines across the country are what's going on with health care, and Obamacare is going to be sustained unless President Obama is voted out of office. That's here for keeps, like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. And we're also talking about Fast and Furious. Is that a political loser, but a necessary evil for Republicans? But first things first, never far from our minds are the threats overseas and the terror which lurks beneath, especially when you talk about a country like Iran. All that somehow links to a outstanding actor, politically active, very astute guy from Massapequa, Billy Baldwin, who happens to be to me my immediate left. And if you're watching online at KillMeAndFriends.com, you're looking at him. Billy, welcome back. How do all these stories link together?
Well, through our mutual friend Reza Khalili, who is the author of A Time to Betray, a book about his experience at a very unique time in American history and a very unique time in the history of Iran. He was a student in the 70s, left Iran when it was easy to leave. He came to the United States, attended university here during all the cultural changes there during the Shah of Iran. Goes back after he finishes his education, right at the time that the fall of the Shah, and in comes the Ayatollah. Everybody thinks this is a sweeping tide, a revolution. It's going to lead to the changes that they wanted. Well, a lot of the changes they saw in the Shah, westernization, modernization, more freedom, more art, more culture, more openness, more universities popping up all over Tehran. And lo and behold, they get 18 months into this experience with the Ayatollah, and they realize this is not going the way they thought it was. This is not leading to the revolution that they had hoped for and expected.
And we remember the hostage crisis, and we remember really since 1979, they've been really the number one enemy of America and American culture and the West. And to me, if you want to stop terror, you stop it there. Like a planner's wart, you pull that out, and a lot of these other groups would fall apart. Nobody knows that better than our guest we have on the line right now, Reza Khalili. And he has been on our show before on TV and on radio. He wrote A Time to Betray. And Reza, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be on your show.
You made and we're altering your voice, and that's not your real name. You made a big decision after going back and forth. What was your decision that changed your life and had you write this book?
I made the decision at that time that something needed to be done. I couldn't stand by and watch the horrific events taking place in Iran, the rape and torture of innocent Iranians under this brutal regime, and the terror network. I was concerned. I came to U.S. thinking that by letting the U.S. authorities know that these events were taking place in Iran, that the regime was not only a threat to the Iranian people, but rather to the world, that they would take action. And one thing led to the other, and I met with a CIA officer, and he asked me if I was willing to become their eyes and ears, while at the same time letting me know, should I get caught, U.S. would deny any relationship. And as he said, there won't be a Navy fleet coming for your rescue. So I accepted, and through years, I tried to raise awareness in the West by passing information, hoping that they would take action, and writing the book was with the same aspiration, to raise awareness, to show the truth on a very human level, so the West would wake up and we would help for change.
So, Billy, this very dangerous society where they look for any heretics amongst them, he lived for how long in Iran as a CIA agent?
Reza, answer that question, because I don't know exactly to the year. First, let's explain. He stages under false pretenses. One of his best friends during his childhood was one of the most powerful figures in the intelligence division of the reputed and infamous Republican Guard within the Ayatollah's army. And he was able to convince his direct superior, who also was a childhood friend, to allow him to come back to the United States to put his aunt into a nursing home or to get a special like hospice care because she was experiencing dementia back then in the 1980s. And he, Reza was very clever about it, didn't put any immediate demands, just said he didn't want to raise any red flags and said, when you can get me back there, I've got to take care of my aunt. This being a childhood friend of his, he opened up the doors, allowed him to come back to the United States, and that's what led to the first contact
with the
FBI and then led to the CIA, which I think was very, very shrewd. Mm-hmm. Once you got back there and once you were planted there, Reza, and by the way, providing the hottest intelligence and the most significant intelligence to the Reagan administration and to the intelligence community, mm-hmm, and to the Pentagon coming out of Iran and coming out of the Middle East. How long were you doing that for, Reza?
I was there in the 80s, and then late 80s, I came to Europe, continued my collaboration with the CIA in Europe on Revolutionary Guards terrorist activities and the Islamic Society and the activities out of mosque. And then I came to U.S. in the 90s, continued my collaboration till the mid-90s. Then I became totally frustrated by lack of action, and the collaboration stopped. But after the 9/11, I started some form of collaboration, passing information, and then some collaboration with the FBI, and today I teach at the Joint Counterintelligence Training Academy of the Department of Defense.
Reza, before you left for Europe, and when you were in deep cover in Tehran with the Republican Guard, how many years did you do that? I'm curious.
The thing is that we have changed some timeline for them not to find out who I am.
Okay. Yeah. Great. No wonder I don't know.
So, and the significance of you two getting together, Bill, you bought the rights to this book called The Time to Betray.
You have to remember, I graduated high school, and my father was a political science and government history teacher at your high school, Brian.
Yep.
And that was always talk around the table. So when I, during the Carter administration and the Iranian hostage crisis, and then Reagan freeing the hostages, and then me going off to college, I was a political science major with an emphasis on the Arab-Israeli conflict. So my 10th grade through 12th grade of my high school years and all of my major in political science in college, there was a huge emphasis on the conflict going on in the Middle East, and specifically what was going on in Iran. And I have great curiosity and interest and passion for what's going on in that region, in particular what's going on in Tehran.
And how little we know, Menachem Begin, Anwar Sadat, the peace agreements, Carter, being voted out, the attempted rescue operation. So that there's something about this story, you have a background in it, that attracted you. What's the time frame to bringing Reza's story to the big screen?
Well, we're hoping to bring it to either the big or small screen. I think it's such a dynamic, dense piece of material that it would be difficult to cover in 90 to 100 minutes in the form of a feature film. We may be better served doing this as a cable miniseries, you know, a HBO, Showtime, where, you know, doing this as a, you know, 4 1-hour slots. But one thing I wanted to point out, and I'd love for Reza to comment on this, is, you know, recently, and this has always been my suspicion, my great suspicion, is that even though the administrations are significantly you know, in conflict with one another. There was recently a Kristof piece in the New York Times about how he had this journey through Iran, and he met with and he talked to a lot of the Iranian people, and how much in common and how much overlap and how much passion that these people, more so than other countries in the region, maybe even more so than our greatest ally in the region, Saudi Arabia, they have great affection and great passion, the Iranian people do, for America and for the American people, not necessarily for the politics or for the administration, but for our people and for our culture. You got to remember, you go to Beverly Hills right now, and there's a park that I lived on for a year. You open my back door and you go out onto Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills, and on a Saturday or Sunday morning, there's 5,000 people in that park, and 3,000 of them are expatriates from Iran that left right before the fall of the Shah.
We had great relations for a while. So Reza, in the big picture, how do you feel about your life being brought public like this?
Well, I'm very excited for a couple of reasons. One, that Billy and his co-producing partner, Warren Kohler, are very passionate about this story, about justice, human rights, suffering of the Iranian people, who, by the way, are one of the most westernized people in the region. And they love America. They love Israel.
Did we let them down, in your estimation, a couple of years ago when they had riots in the streets and they were basically gunned down?
Absolutely. Every administration has tried to negotiate with this barbaric regime with the hope of bringing a change in behavior. But in 2009, we lost the biggest opportunity as millions took out to the streets shouting regime change, and they were looking for West to support them. Unfortunately, the West was busy negotiating with the regime. Had we supported the people at that time without firing a single bullet, the regime change had taken place and the geopolitics of the region and the world had changed.
And the focus of this, you know, is really set in the 70s and 80s, but how timely and topical and current is it with the current, you know, with
Absolutely.
The Arab Spring and everything that's going on in the region?
Isn't Egypt following the same template as what we witnessed with you guys?
But, you know, I have warned about Egypt before even Mubarak was taken down. So Egypt, we've got to be very careful that the military junta doesn't fall, because if the military junta falls, a Muslim Brotherhood will take hold power. There will be a new force such as the Revolutionary Guards, which was formed in Iran, and we will see a very dangerous times ahead.
Well, do you think we're wrong to invite the Muslim Brotherhood leadership over to the White House as we did 2 weeks ago, and we congratulate him immediately again?
But you see, we got to understand the ideology. I think we are missing the big point about the ideology. And I urge everyone to watch the Iranian documentary, which I revealed, The Coming Is Upon Us. That's on my website, thetimetobetray.com, to get the bulk of the ideology. The ideology itself, unfortunately, is looking for the destruction of the West and the conquest of Islam. But I got to say one thing about the Iranian people. Iranian people see themselves as Persians, not Muslims.
Right.
They see themselves with a great history, and they have a love for life, a love for the West, and therefore they should be.
So they're being held hostage by their leadership?
Absolutely.
And that's what you're going to bring forward, Billy. Are you going to focus on the individual journey and the danger that
we're
going
to focus on several things. We've spoken about what obviously will be one of the thrusts of the piece, and that's him as a double agent for the CIA in deep cover in the intelligence arm of the Republican Guard. But also, he had this beautiful relationship with two of his childhood friends, one from sort of his side of the tracks. They played youth soccer together on like the sand lots of Tehran together. And one of them was on one side of the conflict and he and his family members and sister were executed. And another one was his direct superior inside the Republican Guard. So that triangle and that friendship is a major thrust. The conflict where he did this for years and couldn't tell his friends and family and could not tell his own wife for all the years that he was doing. Reza used to go to family events. And behind closed doors, family members, as is discussed in the book, family members were denouncing the Ayatollah. You couldn't do that publicly because you'd be tortured or you'd be executed. But behind closed doors, they were denouncing the Ayatollah. Right. In walks Reza in his Republican Guard garb, his uniform, and there was a lot of tension with his own family. He had aunts and uncles who would stand up and walk out of the room as soon as he walked in the room because they despised the Ayatollah and they couldn't understand.
And they thought, why are you working for him?
And he couldn't say, wink, wink, you know, don't worry, in the long run, everything's going to be okay. He couldn't lead on, and to this day he can't because it was too dangerous.
Well, Reza, you picked a good guy to produce it. He's going to bring it forward, and he's going to do a great job with your life story, which you've taken tremendous risk in coming out and talking about. One day I hope to meet you in person without your voice altered and without being in drop shadow. Is that possible?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm very excited, and I thank Billy for picking this up. Looking forward to bringing this book into a movie, and I'm very excited about it.
All right, Reza, keep us up to date on what's happening. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Reza.
All right, so William Baldwin will stick around, and we'll talk a little bit of politics and talk about what just went down yesterday because, man, he is very much involved. This is Kilmeade and Friends.
Don't agree with Brian?
What's he doing? What's he thinking?
Engage in some friendly fire. You're with Kilmeade and Friends.
All right, Billy Baldwin's here, and he's got another movie in the works, and we just heard from Reza Khalil, and by the way, he's been on a couple of times, and our audience very attuned to what's going on with the war on terror and the threat Iran faces. Billy, you're a guy that's always been engaged politically. I know you were big into it for Al Gore, correct?
Yeah, I was a big friend of Al Gore's for years because I interned on the Hill for a congressman from Long Island who you know, Tom Downey. I worked on the Hill, interned on his staff, and then went on to work on some stuff with his staff and campaigns and
before
stuff.
Before you got into the acting thing?
Right after I graduated from college, I went to the Hill, and I was there. And he, at that time, and to this day, he was one of Al Gore's best friends. So I was around Gore when I was 22, 23 years old. And then when I became a successful actor and I was engaged politically, I had done some work in Democratic politics and for the Gore campaign.
So not only are you passionate about political science with a background in it, you actually know what goes on in the Hill. In the big picture, how would you rate the first 3.5 years of President Obama?
It's a tricky question. I mean, overall, the first word that comes to my mind is disappointing. I can't say that it's disappointing for me. It's a little bit disappointing. I think that more could have been done, and more could have been done sooner if they played their cards right and they had handled some things differently. But I'm not one of these people that, as a result of the way things, the way the administration has performed, I'm not somebody who is interested in seeing Mitt Romney become president. Put it that way.
Right. You're not willing to jump parties.
No, I would be able willing to jump. I would never leave. I wouldn't leave my party unless my party left me. You got to remember, you know, when Abraham Lincoln was president, he was a Republican, and Republicans were liberals. And now Democrats are liberals. So if the party ever left me, then I guess I would have to switch to another party. But I would never, you know, I'm sort of a dyed-in-the-wool progressive. And, you know, I'm very disappointed, I think, in many instances. And we're not going to agree on a lot of this, but I think in many instances they hadn't gone too far. I don't like the fact that they invited, you know, Larry Summers and Geithner to the table. I think these are some of the guys, and Goldman Sachs were some of the guys that contributed to the problem in the first place.
And the whole thing is, too, is that these guys all left. So whatever you thought of them, they're all gone.
Yeah.
So no one's accountable, and I find the whole thing very frustrating. The main thing I'm disappointed, me personally disappointed in, I don't even care what politician you are. Number one, the class warfare, the resentment of the successful, whether it's something that was written down, it seems to be relentless. And number two, continuing to not take responsibility, blaming Bush 3.5 years in. And I ask you, do you ever remember Bush saying, well, Clinton let bin Laden go? He had so many chances to get him, and he didn't. One thing about Bush, he didn't really look back. Hey, well, I inherited a recession, a political scandal, the dot-com bubble burst. Never talked about that.
Yeah. Well, they inherited a situation that we had not seen, certainly in our lifetime. Our parents had seen that when they were young children and during the Great Depression. But, you know, it did get tired after a while. At a certain point, you have to own that and take responsibility for that, and you're completely accountable for that. And clearly, we're at that point now. We've been there for a while. I just wish I would have assumed that where we are, where we'll be 18 months from now with the economy is where we should have been, you know, 6 months ago. I would have thought we would have been much further along in the recovery of the economy at this point. But I'm not one of those guys that felt like was expecting any kind of significant change, you know, 6 months after I knew that this was like a 5-year process. Everyone was saying that. And I'm not an economist or anything, but the writing was on the wall. The message I kept getting is that it was going to take a while to turn this around.
Right. Now, for you personally, what is it like for you? Because it seems like every other day there's a Baldwin in the news when your brother is being sued, sued. Kevin Costner, that went to court.
Right.
And then Alec, again, in the news. I mean, he's getting all types of accolades. But what was your reaction with the photographer? You're in the same situation. They're looking to take your picture, too.
Yeah, you know, if you're... And Sean Penn's a friend of mine, not a good friend. But if you're Sean Penn, it's the 1980s. And, you know, I've been around photographers. I came out of Madonna's apartment one time. I had a meeting with her on a movie. And I came out of her apartment. When I walked in, there was nobody there. When I walked out, there was, you know, an hour and a half later, there was 30 photographers there. Somebody tipped somebody off and said, right. Billy Baldwin's at Madonna. This is like 1989 or something. I come out, and these guys are ganging up on me, and they're bumping into me with their cameras, and they're throwing the lenses up in my face. And I got into that same situation. I, like, you know, kicked a camera out of somebody's hands, and I wound up getting sued. I went having to pay somebody $25,000 or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, after all we've been through and all we've learned, and we're no longer in our 20s and it's no longer the 80s, I think you just put your head down and you keep walking.
All right, that's advice from a younger brother to an older brother.
He won't take it. Trust me, he never has.
Well, we love having you in, Billy. Make this your home, away from home, all right?
Yeah, thanks, Brian.